One of my wives talked to me about the number of times that she would lay in bed and wonder if I was alive or dead. And is the call going to come in, and how it kept her on edge all the time. And I would have never seen that. And I realized, I thought about my mother. Now, my dad was a drunk, so he was thinking about himself like me. But, you know, I so often then thought about my mother and some other people in my life who I knew really cared and loved about me. And I realized that literally for years I robbed people of emotional security. And, you know, how do you pay that back? I have some longtime friends because of this process. I have three men that I've known since 1959 that I still have contact with because of sitting down with them and making amends. And actually, two out of three of those men, the greatest harm was they loved me and cared about me, and they lost track of me, and they didn't know what had ever happened to me. And so the way they said that I could make that straight is to make sure that they always knew where I was at, that they had my address and current phone number, although a couple of them over the years have said, I've realized I needed to have used pencil with you and not pen, because I've been moved around a lot. But one of my dear friends, his name is Clark. I just talked to him the other day. And, you know, that's a friend. They love me in spite of myself. So that's how I cleaned that up. Matter of fact, he's funny. I told him he needs to work on his feelings of abandonment, because if I move or there's a change in number and I don't notify him ahead and he calls, he just panics, you know. So we just had a long chat the other day. So you might consider some of that from a standpoint of harm. So how do you correct that? Well, these people make sure they know where you're at, that you're doing okay, you know, things like that. My dad died in 86 from alcoholism, his aorta burst, and that was clean. And my mother died in January of 2000. And in 99, I'd long since made amends and stayed in touch with her, and a job I'd been working at ended, and my intuition told me she was going to leave her body within the next 6 months. So I went up to Colorado. She'd started getting Alzheimer's, and so I... those of you who've dealt with anyone with Alzheimer's, it's kind of bizarre, because first time when I got around her, she didn't know me. She said to my brother, "Who's that?" And that was weird. There's no other way to say it. And but then it was interesting. Then she'd have times where she would come in and she would come out, and I'd just go over and sit with her. I'd sit with her 4, 5, 6 hours, and then we'd chat. And sometimes she'd come in, she'd be real clear, and what I saw was, a lot of people with Alzheimer's get terrified quickly. And I have to assume, because of the amends and because of our connection, that even though she'd drift into those times where she didn't know me from anything, she would sit there and be very comfortable. And she would, you know, it would always happen. She'd turn to me and she'd say, "Who are you?" And I'd say, "Well, I'm Mark, you know." And she said, "Well, what are you doing here?" And we, you know, we would just talk in that fashion. And, God, it was wonderful having that whole slate be clean, you know, between us. And I have an altar at home, and I have pictures of my mother and father on that altar. And I thank God every day that they were my mother and my father, you know, every day. It's just amazing what this work does, how it changes your heart, you know, makes you realize, you know, everyone's giving it their best shot. You know, and you get taken to a place of love and, you know, compassion for that. And powerful, powerful stuff. To be free of that. You know, we've talked about amends and stuff, but God, I wouldn't want any of you in here to not know what it's like to have a free heart, to have a free mind, you know, with nothing back there, because you've cleaned it all up. It's all done, man. My capacity to love increased with every amend I made. My capacity to earn money increased with every dime I paid back. My capacity to be a friend increased with every amend I made. Because everything is connected, you know. And all that stuff was barriers to my willingness to make amends to the people I couldn't find. All of that stuff is connected, you know. And there was something I could do with every one of them. My capacity to be a better brother, you know. I got... I got three brothers, you know, you're a Houston, you're probably a drunk. And that's just the way that laid out. And, you know, I chat with them. I love them just as they are. They tell me if they ever get as bad as me, they'll go to AA. And funny story about that. Last time we had a family reunion, it gets kind of interesting because they're drinking beer and smoking dope and doing what they do. And so I'm getting ready to leave, and they also like to ride motorcycles and big Harleys and shit. So I tell them we're in this little town in Iowa, and I said, well, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. Yeah, you know. So they decide to go for a ride. Well, two of them laid down their motorcycles. So that night I got to go at the hospital and visit them in the hospital bed. They got roughed up pretty bad. My brother punctured a lung and some other stuff. And so, of course, I'm spiritual, but getting even's better sometimes. So he's sitting there and his ribs are all wrapped up. And I said, so did you have a lot of fun out the ride? And he said some four-letter words. And I said, well, you might consider next time, instead of going for a motorcycle ride, come to an AA meeting with me, you know. So, but I love them just as they are, you know. It's not my business whether they get sober or whether they don't get sober. It's no big deal. All that stuff, cleaned up all that stuff. Quick story about the last two amends that were in my consciousness. In September of 1968, I was going to college and then gone back and dated. Went out with this gal two times. And sex the second time. And 9 months to a day, a boy was born. And she named him after me. And this was back in 68, very conservative Midwest Iowa. It's kind of the deal where if you didn't marry, the dad got a shotgun and he'd come. And it was that kind of a deal. And I didn't. What I had done at that time was we settled that in terms of financial obligation, and I went ahead and did that. So then I went on with my life. In 1975, I remember them contacting me. She had remarried, and I signed some papers in terms of him changing his last name from mine to the other one. And so then I got sober, and over the years, she had remarried and gone away. No way to find him. And I guess starting in about 97, my consciousness started to work on me, and I started getting on the internet, and I still had some pals lived in that area, and I said, why don't you go start scouring and see if any of her relatives are still alive? And they had passed away, and her family had passed away. And I was actually at about a place where I was willing, because it wouldn't leave me, and where I was willing to hire. You know, there's firms you can hire and pay up to $1,200, $1,500. They're very reputable to find people. And I was told I had enough basic information they could probably do something. Well, same time I'm going back to Iowa, I'd spent that time with my mother. See, this is I want to tell you this little story. You know, you do this work, great stuff's going to happen, right? So here's what happened. I lost my job. I lost the place that I was staying in. Had some physical, all kinds of stuff. Neat stuff happened because I did the steps, right? But in the middle of it all, the reason that job needed to go away was I needed to go spend time with my mother and make these amends I'm going to tell you about and a bunch of other stuff. So you just don't know what's going to happen. At any rate, so I'm driving from Denver to this little town, and I get to the town where she originally lived. It's only 20 miles away. And I'm telling you, it was like a screen came down. I had a reservation in the town I was going to. And I absolutely knew I could not drive past that town. I'm awake today, so I just parked my car at a hotel and I stayed there. Next morning I prayed. Intuition says go down to the courthouse. So I got out at the courthouse, and I told you we'd settled that thing in 1969. So I go down and I said to the lady, do you have any records? And she goes, no. She said downstairs in the basement, it was like a dungeon. She said, there's some old ledger books. You can go down there and see if you want. I have no way of accessing the file. I'd probably have the file. So I go down, and I mean, these real old, huge ledger books, and there's like hundreds. So it's like, okay. So I pray, and I get guided to two ledger books. Well, it was in the second ledger book. I found the case number. So I go back upstairs, and she pulls it, and so she said, here. And so I sit down, and I look while I'm going through, and lo and behold, there was information in her, for whatever reason, about her married name. So now at least I got a last name in that town. So I go to a phone book, and there's three people with that last name. I go to the first house, no one there. Go to the second house. I pull up. It's like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. This old boy is sitting out there and drinking beer. And I said, oh, I can talk to this guy. And so I go walking up, and I said, I'm looking for so-and-so. You know, are you him? And he said, well, yeah, I'm him. And I said, well, I'm looking for this person. He goes, well, that was my brother, and he was married to her. And I said, oh, okay. So he said, well, why are you looking for her? And I told him why I was looking for her, to make an amends, and that I had a son. And this guy stopped me, looked me dead in the eye, and he said, are you that boy's father? And I looked him dead in the eye and said, yes, I am. He said, well, he lives in this town. And he said, he and his mother haven't talked in 3 years. He said, they're angry at each other. And he said, by the way, you're a grandfather. And I said, what? He said, yeah, he like father, like son. He has two children running around town, and he didn't marry either one of them either. And he said, let me make a phone call. So he, in between drinking his brewskis, he makes a phone call, and he said, here's his phone number. And he said, I can't tell you where she's at because her and my brother had a nasty divorce, and I don't like her. Okay. So I got that information. So I say a prayer, and my sense is that I need to talk to her before I talk to him. And he did tell me the town she had moved in was like 200 miles away. So I go on up to Humboldt, Iowa, and I was going to a 35-year class reunion. And needless to say, a few more amends surfaced at that reunion. But so I get up there, and I spend some time in prayer, and I wound up calling the town. And there were two people with that last name, and then the first number is disconnected, and then I get the second number. And the phone rings, and this woman answers, and I said, hello, I says, is this so-and-so? And she said, yes, it is. And I said, did you used to be so-and-so? And she said, yes. And I said, well, I'm Mark Houston. And it's dead silence. And then I went on to tell her why I was calling her. And to make a long story short, we wound up talking for an hour. She's a woman who's had her own experience with God, a very, very strong Christian, and said, you know, Mark, I forgave you years and years and years ago. And she said, I am just so happy that that's what's happened with your life. And then I got to talking, you know, about our son. And I wound up giving her his phone number because she didn't have it. And I wind up talking her through this thing that she's angry about and making her see that it's her pride and that this is her son and that would she consider doing some things if, in fact, she's the Christian woman that she says she is. She wound up crying a little, and I wound up crying a little, and then that was that. So then I have my son. Now, common sense told me I'm not going to, because I found out where he worked, I'm not going to show up at his workplace and say, hi, how are you? I'm, you know. So I prayed about it, picked up the telephone, then he answered, you know, and I said, this is Mark Houston. Do you know who I am? He said, oh, yeah, I know who you were. And so I told him why I was calling. I told him that I could not stay sober, you know, unless I did this thing, and this was a deal. And I talked about where I saw the nature of the harm, that I completely abandoned him and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and rolled out that way. And I got done, and I said, you know, I said to him, is there anything I can do to set this right? And he said two things. He said, well, one, he said, I'd like to think about that, and then I'd like to consider whether or not I want to have any contact with you. He's using words I use all the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I would be glad to do that. And I gave him my name, and I gave him my address and all that stuff. And I said, you know, you give this some thought, and you give this consideration. And if you ever want to do anything, you want me to do anything, you let me know that. And so I was done with that piece, that body of work. And I just can't tell you what it was like to hang up the phone and know there wasn't a human on the planet that I wasn't clean with. You have to have that experience. Some things started to happen off that, and then I'm going to let Joe wind this thing down. My capacity, some things happened. My fear of death left me that day. And because it was clean, and now I could embrace life at a level that I'd never been able to embrace before. my what I did with 10, 11, and 12 just took off like a rocket. It was just unbelievable. The power, the intuitiveness, the capacity to love and have compassion for myself and others, just beyond belief. So, you know, that's why Joe and I guess, have spent some time talking to you all about, God, don't miss out on this thing. Don't miss out on cleaning this up for you, for them, for God, for your fellow human beings. I know what the term heaven on earth means. See, I know what that means. And the steps tell us that we get to experience heaven on earth if we're willing to do this stuff. And to then be able to go through life with anything that speaks of separation does not exist in your heart anymore. You know, it's gone. It's removed. And a level of freedom and a level of consciousness that you just can't believe. So don't miss out on this thing, you know. Don't let anyone read your big book. You New Yorkers have not seen the last of me.
Yeah.
You know. So, God bless you all, and I'll see you next time I'm back.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you very much. This is a man that's been there for me for 20 years. This is one of the first times I realized in my heart what my sponsor used to say. You finally get to the good stuff, and you run out of time. That's why our time together is so valuable. My God, you all live in a city where you're more awake to that than most of the people in the rest of the country. He says he'll be back. He also knows that's no guarantee. Yeah. Mark Houston could drink. Joe Hawk could drink. It's not about the messenger. It's not about the sponsor. We were talking about it yesterday. It's about seeking God. Of your own understanding. You live in L.A. for 10 years. Mickey knows. It would be like living in Detroit and not experiencing Ford motor cars. Or growing up in Battle Creek, Michigan and not eating Kellogg's cornflakes. You come to love movies. I've been to enough movies at certain times where you can't tell the difference between a movie and an AA meeting. They just kind of mesh. It's like that, well, okay. I thought of two movies this morning. One is one called Jacob's Ladder, Adrian Lyne, and Tim Robbins. And there's a line in that movie from Danny DeVito. No, Danny Aiello, a New Yorker. He says, if you haven't gotten free and you're still holding on and you're not free to go, all you'll see are devils tearing you away from your life. But if you've made your peace and you're free to go, all you'll see are angels taking you to a better place. Depends on how you look at it. It's all about perception. Right? Another movie, one of my favorites, Apocalypse Now. It could be a title appropriate to the times that we're in, because the shit's getting strange, right? And if you avoid that which makes you uncomfortable, if you're not willing to face, that's why I use the language I use sometimes to help people get free. Because if this is separate from this, and this is good, and this is bad, I've been praying my ass off for the last 5 years, working with some incredible people that have the power within themselves to take you past your own mind. But there's this line in Apocalypse Now, where I have felt like Colonel Kurtz a few times, but into the light rather than the dark, you know. to split from the whole deal, to blow the box open, to go outside of the box, to see that there's not like AA. AA is about living a spiritual life. There's not like AA and then, you know, you're... Every area that I've ever put outside of the confines of living a spiritual life, I've lost it every time because I put it before God. And everything I put before God, I lose. Now, that can be a blessing. That can be a curse. I think it's a blessing because I think a spiritual person, and Don Coy has said this to me over and over and over, a spiritual person, as far as alcoholics are concerned, it's not someone that reaches some state of perfection and just transcend. We've all seen people go out behind insanity. But we've also, and I could tell you some stories that would curl your teeth. I've seen some people that just blew right out of the top of Alcoholics Anonymous, transcended alcoholism, you know, became, you know, were taken to a state of consciousness where they were so deluded, they thought they would never feel resentment again. You know. What if your four best, if you would have, I don't know why I want to talk about this. If you would have asked me 10 years ago, who are the four closest people in your life that you think in your area in Los Angeles have done the most spiritual work of the people that you're close with? I would have told you four guys. So imagine your four closest people in your life. At the time, Mark was not one of them. I'm saying in Los Angeles. Mark was in Texas. He's been like a brother since 82. I would have told you these four guys. They all four moved to four different places, weren't really in communication. They all came up against an idea. Working with others in the program, seeking God, and these four had one thing in common. They had gone for something that most people in AA say is outside of the program. They had followed their heart. One ended up doing this stuff. One ended up doing some of this. Continuing to work with others. I think the only thing to watch for is that you're not doing something instead of. Do it along with. Most people in Denver, they do 1 through 9. They're in 10, 11, and 12 for a period. And they let their heart take them to another tradition. But they don't become the tradition. They don't become this or that. It's hard enough with what Mark described yesterday with the Theater of the Light, you just believe that you're an alcoholic, right? I think it's strange that we identify ourselves by a disease. You know, I'm a recovered alcoholic, child of God, you know. I'm not going to take on an identity of a disease that I'm promised I can get free of, you know. And these four guys, and I met with them later after I came back from India. These four guys came up against a reservation, and the reservation was this. They would be working with somebody, and they'd say, let's look at the proposition, God is everything or nothing. And they said that every time they came up against it and had to look at it themselves, or when they were going through the work, these weren't guys that stopped going to meetings or working with others or doing the work. They were seeking God deeper and deeper and deeper. They would come up against this idea, God is everything or nothing, and then they'd find out, but it can't be this. God is everything, but I have the picture of how everything is. God couldn't have anything to do with this. God couldn't have anything to do with this. My opinions about God have caused me tremendous amounts of suffering. So these four guys, four different places, separate from each other, came up against an idea. If God is everything, now you got to keep an open mind for this. He's removed the obsession to drink. He puts me in a fit spiritual condition. The spiritual malady healed over and over and over, emotionally, physically, mentally. But alcohol still my master, because if I took a drink, I would turn into a werewolf. The craving would be there and I'd be dead. Then alcohol is still your master. And they had to face it. They had to get free of it. I heard about these rumors. I had to do it in prayer. Do I believe God's been there for the mental obsession? Yes. Do I believe God's been there for the spiritual malady? Yes. In every area of my life, time after time, after mistake, yes. Emotionally, yes. But do I still believe God, alcohol is my master? Now, they had to try a few different things, and it wasn't behind insanity. It was about a dedication to seek God. One of them tried drinking. He wasn't interested in intoxication, and he did it opposite from the way it used to be. He set the intent, when, how much, the reason, why he was going to do it, and nothing happened. He got free. He wasn't interested in staying intoxicated. It wasn't even part of the intent. Changed his date because he respects Alcoholics Anonymous and came back to Alcoholics Anonymous free of an illusion. How far are you willing to go to get free of whatever might come to your heart that's blocking you? Right? Joe says this. Joe says that. Joe makes me uncomfortable. If I made you uncomfortable this weekend, good. I've done my job. Because the people, I don't remember the people, little blue-haired old ladies that come up to you and tell you everything's just fine, honey. You're doing great. Because most of the time when I needed that, I didn't need that. Because I wasn't doing great. I needed somebody that loved me enough to say, what about this? What about this? What about that? Where are you at? What about the amends? I remember those that loved me enough to not care about whether it made me uncomfortable or not. There's some things on this path you got to start to care about, and there's some things on this path, if you start to care about, they will drive you crazy. Imagine those of you in the room that have taken people through the work. If you cared about what every one of those people you worked with did what you shared with them, you'd go nuts. Imagine to be in a position like this and care whether I'm popular or not. They're speakers. I've heard this term. I don't know if you've ever heard it, Chris. I don't know. But I've heard this term before. I have to protect my national reputation. And it, you know what it is? It's always different than their local reputation. I'll tell you, if you meet somebody from Santa Monica, they either love me or they hate me. Right? Doesn't bother me. I'm free. I got mine. Get free. Put my name in the first column. Right? That's what you tell them. Get free, because I've had to put your name in the first column. Right? For years in that group, that group's been doing the work in Santa Monica for 15 years. And it's a reflection of this weekend. Not right, not wrong. It's just where we are and what's working and what isn't. I wanted to get 30 people together who were on the other side of one set of amends. And do a weekend on 10, 11. Because what I love is 30 people in a circle for a weekend, nobody leading nothing, and joining the fellowship of the Spirit. We've done that this weekend. I have felt welcomed here. Get 30 people together. The guy that put it together said every one of them's on the other side of amends. We can spend the whole weekend talking about 10, 11, and 12. You start Friday night, and I could feel it. Something happens in a circle. A lot of you know that. And I felt something over here, one, pulling. Something over here, it's just like, you can feel it. I didn't feel that in this room this weekend. Right? There's not a lot of fight in this room. I love to be with people who are just trying to give their best with the power they've been given to doing what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And isn't it interesting? People that simply want to do what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous are judged and cast out and ridiculed and called names that I would not call anybody on this planet. I mentioned the word the other day. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're judged because they need the whole program. The message isn't the message anymore. They told us that in the fourth edition. So we got 30 people. I'm feeling this energy from three parts of the room. And it ain't happening. Friday night, all we can talk about is, why aren't you done with amends? And it's never why you're not done with amends. It's why you don't believe step one anymore. So there we are, back to one. Saturday, the same energy. Lunch, I'm just feeling sad. I want to join with some brothers and talk about what is it like now, living in the world of the Spirit. And here's this energy. Went to the bathroom, I'm crying. I said a prayer, dear God, give me a question that I can ask this room that'll expose what's pulling on the energy. question came to me, never thought of, never heard, didn't want to ask. And the question was, it didn't even seem appropriate to what I was feeling in the room. The question was this: why do so many people who don't want to do the work want to be around people who want to do the work? Came back, asked the question. Three hands went up, right where I was feeling it from. One guy says, check this out. And he'd been on several of our retreats. He said, I like to be around you guys because I get more attention than you guys when you beat me up and beat me up when I come on one of these weekends and say something I know is going to give me a bunch of attention than I do in any group that I've ever been a part of. I love it because negative attention for me is better than feeling good, because feeling good makes me extremely uncomfortable because I'm so attached to being sick. Comfort makes me feel bad. Like that other movie. There's a movie for you. It's a stupid movie, Con Air. There's a scene, though, where Steve Buscemi is saying about a guy across the aisle, that man is so attached to his sickness and his anger, anything that makes him feel comfortable is terribly painful. Second guy raised his hand. I forgot what he said. Third guy raised his hand. He said something I never even dreamed of. And this is a guy that's working with others in L.A., not a part of our home group, but he was there. He was welcome. And he said, I like to be around people that do the work so I can save those that the work hurts. And I said, are you really saving those the work hurts, or you're saving those that are hurting from not doing the work? You start this process and stop, you can get sicker than you were when you started. Nobody told us that when we were doing it at New. You start this work and your spirit's going to go on without you. And you stop somewhere, four, in the middle of five, you will get worse than when you started. Right? Start with a commitment. This is my commitment, was the first question. Another story. I was asked to speak at the 50th anniversary of AA in Canada. I don't know what year it was. They're about 8 years behind us. And the first night, they took us on a boat ride. And you know, it was a cool boat ride. They had some fireworks on the way back. I was getting a little bored. I'm the kind of guy that's got to be after somebody all the time, right? I got to be shaking it up. I just gotta find somebody, right? And there's a deck on the boat about as big as this room. Tables, 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 tables. And I said, God, show me something to do. And it was like there was a light shining on this guy. And he wasn't the only black guy on the deck. And it wasn't because he was black. He was just like, shh, I'm the one. And I said, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? And my intuition said, walk up to that guy, introduce yourself, and say, my name's Joe Hawk, and I'm here to tell you what you don't know about the program. I said, I can't do that. I can't do it. And you know what? Every time my head says, I can't do it, that increases my faith when I jump up. My sponsor said, I was 3 years sober, 1985. You're speaking at the International in Montreal. I can't do it. He said, good, maybe you'll have to rely on something that'll help you do it. If I can do it, where's the challenge? Where's God, you know? I said, I can't do that. Walk up to that. He's a scary looking brother. There's a bunch of brothers around. I can't walk up and do that. Do it. Usually when it comes three times, I got to go, right? Walked up to him. Hi, I'm Joe Hawk. What's your name? He said, Sydney. I said, where are you from? He said, the Republic of Harlem. I said, I've been there. I've been there. I used to cop dope there. Yeah, I've been there. How you doing? He said, good. I said, I'm here to tell you what you don't know about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and walked away. The rest of the weekend, he's following me. What'd you mean when you said? Then I'd lay something on him, and then I'd run away. It's like fishing. Working with drunks is like fishing sometimes. Sometimes they're just like, they're hooked right away. Sometimes it takes a little bait, little more bait, little more bait, right? Didn't take much bait. Took one question. Don Coyas hooked me the same way when I met him, 8 years sober. Asked me one question. I'd sat in a restaurant with him. I'd listen to him. He loves to talk. Amazing guy. Went in the bathroom. He'd talked for 2 hours. Couldn't remember one word, but I knew he touched my heart. In the parking lot, he leaves me with one question. How do you know what you don't know? Because I suppose this might just be a theory about how I was then. I probably thought I knew a lot, right? And he said, how do you know what you don't know? I was hooked. Took me a week, but it was on my mind. I had to call him. So Sydney was just like all during that weekend. What'd you mean when you said that? Go over here. What'd you mean when you said that? Then I'd go over here. We became brothers. Wow, and what happened from that? What happened from that's about other people. That ain't about me. I don't need to work with people to save my ass from some fear. I've just been in a place for 5 years. I didn't take anybody. I didn't get to share with anybody 1 through 9 from 1997 until 2002. That was by the grace of God because I was doing it too much. I needed to find out about some other stuff. I was looking for people. I put together a drug and alcohol treatment program so there'd be some people to take through 1 through 9 because I thought I was going to stay there. Imagine being, and I used to wonder, why was I always attracted at these internationals to the loners and the internationalist meeting? Because people talked about not having the distractions that we have of all the meetings all the time that you're using to keep from doing the work sometimes. I heard guys at the loners meeting at the International in Montreal and Seattle that got a meeting every 6 months because they were a forest ranger or up in the Himalayan mountains. And what did they talk about AA? AA is not a place. AA for them was about a personal relationship with God and a way of life. I believed it, but I didn't know it. I always had a home group. I end up in India for 5 years, and I found out what I believed is true. You know, I usually believe things way before I know they're true. I knew it in my heart. It felt right in my heart. Meetings don't keep me sober. AA is not a place you go. It's not like AA is over here and your life's over here and your sex life's over here and your money's over here. Because when it is, that's exactly how it feels and you wonder why you feel scattered. You've either decided to live on a spiritual basis of life or not. And it makes it much easier for us to live on a spiritual basis when it's about life and death. But the funny thing is, those that need to know that it's about life and death to live on a spiritual basis are the only ones that forget it's about life and death to live on a spiritual basis over and over and over. Don Corius used to say, a spiritual person in AA is somebody who fucks up on a regular basis and goes back to God rather than going back to self or going back to another human being. Screw up, go back to God. Screw up, go back to God. It's a good day when I only screw up once or twice. A friend of mine said to me the other day, it's been 2 years since you'd been through the work. I said, great. How was your fifth step? Great. How many amends you got? 2. I said, you must be a remarkable person or really isolated. And she is. 2 people in 2 years. Damn, that's a good week for me, you know. I had to call Chris Raymer the other day and make amends, you know. Thought something really bad wasn't true. Made a judgment. That's what's the line from the other movie I was thinking of, from Apocalypse Now. It's my judgment that kills me. He said, Willard, have you ever imagined getting free of judgment? Judgment of others? Judgment of yourself? That's freedom. Jim Finley, my teacher who lived with Thomas Merton for 20 years, said to me one time, what's compassion? This was before India. I said, compassion is when you see somebody and you feel some sort of... He said, why are you talking about compassion as a feeling you have for somebody else? What's compassion? I said, well, compassion is when you see another alcoholic and you... He said, why are you talking about somebody else? I didn't have a clue what it meant to have compassion for myself. And I said, well, what is it? He said, it's a loving acceptance of that part of your being that's always going to be broken. And he said to a group in L.A., let alone you all, you tough guys, let alone used guys, right? He said to these people in L.A. that are constantly working on themselves, the next new thing, it's always the next new thing. Because they never get to peace right here. Got to go somewhere. Meditation for me anymore is not about getting somewhere, higher or lower or sideways or up. It's about getting to a place where you're in the moment and it's peaceful and you want what you have and you want to go deeper into it. And Jim Finley says to these people in L.A., true compassion is when you quit preparing. Well, he said this, on the spiritual path at the beginning there's a lot of work, whether it's in therapy or the 12 steps or this or that, there's a lot of work. But you got to get to a point on the spiritual path where you have enough compassion for yourself, where you quit perpetuating violence on yourself. violence on yourself by always trying to change that part of your being that isn't the way you want it to be out of selfishness and lack of compassion for yourself. That's always going to be human. It's our humanness that brings us to God, right? Every time I hear one of these terms, spiritual being, enlightened being, awake being, they always leave out one word, human, right? I've met some incredible spiritual beings around this world. Some of the great living masters, the ones I've been attracted to, the ones that have been brought into my life, their practice is being genuinely human in the moment, right? You got to lose a lot of attachments to get free to be human where you are. Oh, I got to get some. That's how we live nowadays. I'm at home, got to get there. I'm here. Think of the number of movies or two-hour shows you've watched in the last year. A lot, right? How many of you have done more than a two-hour meditation in the last year? What's the difference? What is it the difference between me sitting in a movie theater in front of a television for 2 hours or sitting quietly like this for 2 hours? Because I got to face that stuff that I was pouring booze and drugs on. I don't want to face it and let it come move through it. I don't want to realize that it's impermanent. I want to think it's going to be this way forever. I'm going to live forever. You and I are going to be together forever. I'm definitely going to be back, and you're not appreciating the moment. I saw my mother 2 years ago last month because I knew after 4 years in India I needed to go to Battle Creek, Michigan, Denver, and Los Angeles. I hadn't been there in 5 years. I hadn't seen my mother face to face. Of course, we're in touch. We've been clear a long time. Made amends to her a long time ago. Watched that relationship heal. Saw her 2 summers ago. Had a great week. 10 minutes. This is the way she wanted to do it. And I let her do it the way she wanted to do it rather than the way I wanted to do it, which was the pattern of my whole life. 10 minutes before I'm leaving for the airport, sitting at the kitchen table, no drama. She says, "You know, darling, this will be the last time we see each other." I wanted to say, "Could we have mentioned this on Monday?" You know? But you know what my heart said? This is the way she wants to do it. Went in the bathroom, got on my knees, said a prayer. Anything I need to say, anything I can do. My intuition said, tell her you love her and thank her. It was the last time I saw her. She passed away 4 days after my birthday, June 9th. My oldest friend I've known since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous passed away 5 days later, 30 years sober. I lost a job 2 weeks ago that I cared about because of Mark. Wasn't crazy about Dallas, Texas. It's a little hot, right? It was hot enough for me, let me put it that way. Loved working with the clients. They got 6 people down there from New York that are on fire. One of them that just came back. 2 of them. They're on fire. They're doing the work. But it's not something you got to pay for, but you got to pay for it. You got to pay for it in ways, you know, that aren't always comfortable. But the payoff on the other side of the first time, I wish there was a better word for current. And I guess there is. When you've entered the world of the Spirit, you start to live from a place where you're not dominated by circumstance or emotion. Have I grieved since my mother passed away? Am I afraid of the feelings anymore? No. Is my grief filled with selfishness? Is my grief filled with guilt because the amends weren't done? No. I'm really glad I get to do this thing Wednesday night and that Mike Lawrence provided that time. Because I'm only going to talk about the teachers that I've had and the 11th step in the last 5 years. Because I've been able to experience. I got to be a part of starting a drug and alcohol treatment program for the Tibetan government for the first time in their history. A people that none of you are being told about. There's a genocide going on in their country. One of the most spiritual countries in the world. They never had a war for 3,000 years. They didn't have an army. Didn't have a war. The majority of their population, One son from every family joins a monastery, gladly, just like we send our sons to learn to kill. And you don't think what goes around comes around? But there was a prophecy made by the Native American people about those people, and by those people about what would happen. And it was written in one form, I think, by the Native American people here in the country where our genocide took place. Oh, what happened in Germany could never happen in America? No, check it out. It's happened at least three times in this country. Somebody wrote, when the Iron Eagle begins to fly, the Dharma from Tibet will begin to spread to the land of the red man. Right? And I got to meet those people. And I got to bring something to them they didn't have that you gave to me. Right. To see another friend here that became a brother. Where there's within 20 minutes the time and the space and however many years it's been evaporates. I love my sponsor with all my heart, but I haven't been able to live in the same city with him for 15 years because I trust where God has taken me. I've only lived in three places in 20 years, but I'll tell you what, I could have been really happy 15 years ago to have lived in Mark Houston's house or gotten married and stayed in Denver with Don Pritz down the street and the great people in Denver. But they got something going on there. They already got theirs. They got tremendous people. If you hear about a thing here next year in April, Don Pritz, Gary Brown, Bob Olson, go. Those are three of my heroes. I have heroes. I'm not afraid of the word guru. It's got some bad connotations in this country, but the definition is someone who shines light on the darkness, or someone who shines light on truth. And that's what these people have been for me. Because thank God not one of these teachers wanted me dependent on them. Don Pritz said, I don't know, pray. Don't become dependent on me. I'm powerless. My life is unmanageable. I need God just as much as you do. And we would join in that fellowship, not his fellowship. Right. Had to go. I moved to L.A. to follow through on an amends. I was moved enough to not have to settle for comfort. And you got to have faith to step outside of the comfort. They even have words for it now in America. Words I don't even want to hear. My comfort zone. You're invading my comfort zone, right? Blow it open. Face the stuff that makes you uncomfortable. Face that what you think is repulsive. Because we're surrounded by it in this world. And maybe you'll get taken to a place that I'm just beginning to taste. That they aren't separate. You couldn't have one without the other. I got to do in the last 5 years, 1 year of retreat. Four separate 3-month retreats. The first one was rough. You say, oh, being silent for 3 months would be a relief. In New York, being silent for 3 months would not only be a relief, it would be impossible. None of you could shut up for 3 months, right? It was hard. Halfway through, something burst. During monsoon, perfect time. They got 5 seasons where I lived in India. Winter, spring, summer, fall, and monsoon. And I'm not talking about a little rain every day. I'm talking about it starts raining mid-July, and it stops raining in October, period. The big storm we had the other day here, it was really, really raining. And during monsoon, that'd be a pretty nice day. Go into retreat. 8 to 10 hours of practice a day that I came to love. The weather's nice, sit in the garden. This is with a restaurant, drug and alcohol treatment program getting going, editor of a local newspaper. There's time, there's space, make it. You got kids? Want to do meditation? Get up an hour before the kids. You'll see an hour of meditation is worth 3 more hours of sleep. Haven't you ever had those times where you wake up a little early and the energy is like full on, but you don't get up? And you sleep for another 2-3 hours and you wake up and the energy is like you're more tired, right? Did these retreats. 1 year, 3 months, 1 year, 3 months, 1 year, 3 months. The fourth time, because I'm trying to get free of this dualistic mind. This is good. This is bad. This is black. This is white. This is right. This is wrong. This is retreat. This isn't. This is spiritual. Fuck isn't. this is, that's not, and it's killing me. It's killing me. My judgment is killing me. Don Coy has screwed it up for me. Every judgment you make about somebody else is based on one you have about yourself. Because if you're blah, 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 that's because I believe I'm blah, 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 blah. And believe me, my blah, blah, blah is always better than your blah, blah, blah. Bigger and more special and different and unique. Right? The donkeys, right? So the fourth retreat, I said to my teacher, can I do what I did the last three times? He said, no, 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 you're trying to get free of that mind, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, do this and this and this each day. But every day, go to the market. I'm not talking about going to the supermarket. I'm talking about a market. It's filled with spiritual energy and great people, but it's busy. And go to the market every day for at least 2 hours. Work on one of your projects. Don't use an umbrella. Don Coy used to say to me, watch how somebody reacts to water and dirt. And then realize how they've treated those two things based on how they feel about it. Ooh, I'm getting wet. I mean, don't use an umbrella. Go to the market every day for 2 hours. Work on one of your projects until there's no difference between being in your meditation room and sitting and talking with somebody. And I got to tell you, I had many, many days when there was no difference. And that's what I'm trying to get free of. And that's what the amends do. And that's how you get current. How many times did I say to myself, if I could just start over with my mother, if we could, and I thought it would be absolutely impossible, and on my power, it's absolutely impossible. And we did, by the grace of God. Let me ask you this. Even the power to do the work, doesn't it come from the grace of God? Isn't it possible God used drugs and alcohol to bring you back to him? Who brought more people to God than the devil? Virtue? Comfort? You hear a lot of stories of people that really did something in these churches or movements or Buddhism or Hinduism or Muslims who were just like really, really happy and had no sort of surrender. No, those people just come to the place and they just kind of stay that way. God, the most profound people I ever met hit some sort of bottom with something. What does God use? God couldn't use that. Yeah. God couldn't use that. Oh, I knew when he was supposed to die. I knew when my brother was supposed to die. I knew when my mother was supposed to die. How dare her die? That's my selfishness. That's why I'm not filled with unrealistic grief, selfish grief. God's plan? Am I willing to live on life on terms other than my own? Do I believe whatever God has in mind is better than whatever I have in mind? There's a surrender that can take place in the second step. Can I be present? I learned to be present in a place filled with chaos. Not the place I lived in India, but some of the big cities in India. Get off a plane in the capital of India. The baggage claim seems similar. Airport seems pretty cool. Stepped out of the airport into spiritual energy that you could tangibly feel, that every sense, sight, smell, taste, touch, went up about 10 times. Right? In a city where the traffic here, that would be a well-organized traffic, right? In the middle of chaos, can I be at peace? If you can't be at peace in the middle of chaos, you'll just always avoid anything that makes you feel chaotic. But believe me, we're all going to get physically sick. We're all going to get old. We're all going to have emotional pain. We're all going to lose people. Impermanence is a reality. Nothing is permanent. Only one thing is permanent, and that's what we're going to get to return to. But you can return to it in the moment, anytime you decide. It's not somewhere you got to get. Drop the effort. Enter the world of the Spirit. Continue to do the work, but that won't take any effort if the power and the grace is coming from God. You just show up. You don't figure it out. The great story of one of these silly things is moment, moment, moment. Moment. You don't need to figure out the moment. You just need to be in touch with the invisible thread that runs through each moment. Or religion, 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 all connected by an invisible thread that flows through each religion. These people were the only right ones. They're the only ones that are going to get to God. Ours is the only way. We do that with the work. They're not going to make it to God. You got to do the work. You got to do it this way. You got to call God that name. You got to call him this name. Any other word in the human vocabulary, we would accept. We call it cat. In Spanish, they call it whatever. In Hinduism, they call it a cat, whatever. You can accept that. But when somebody doesn't use the right name that you've put God, I'll give you an example. I went to a talk on God once. Guy said, you got to come hear this guru. It's going to be the greatest talk on God you ever heard. I said, let me go. I'll go hear anything, anywhere. I'll pray in any church, any temple. If there's other people praying, I'll pray. I don't see any separation anymore because I don't live a life where I feel separate. Nobody in this room is any closer to God than anybody else in this room, and nobody in this room is any closer to God than the last time they took a drink. The only thing that changes is our perception of something that's always been there. Nobody in this room is any closer to God than anybody else, and you're not any closer to God than you were the last time you drank. It's only the things that block you from that awareness that get cleared away over and over and over. So I go to this talk about God. It just looked like an Indian guru kind of looking guy. You've seen a million pictures of him. And he starts off his talk, there is no God. I'm like, wow. I thought I'm here to hear about God. There is no God. What was he doing? I start thinking. That's what he wanted me. I start thinking. He's saying I'm not an atheist. How can you say there's no God if you're not an atheist? He said, I'm also not a theist. I said, how can you say there is no God? Then he starts talking about a car. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. When's a car no longer a car? Pull the tires off, still a car. Pull the engine out, still a car. I don't know where he's going. And that's how a lot of you felt when it started this weekend. Dear God, please set it. And everything I thought I knew was being set aside. I thought I was pretty free of mental conception about God, and then I had become more interested in consciousness. There's a great question. You more interested in consciousness or conception? Words about God aren't a conscious contact. They're just words about God in your head. Conscious contact is real. It's a place within you, whatever you want to call it, whatever you believe in. It's inside every one of us. It's our divinity, right? So he's talking about a car. Then all of a sudden he's using it in terms of a body. Pull the arms off. You're still a human? When are you no longer a human? Talks about a baby laying on an operating table, filled with joy and laughter and thing. But as soon as he's cut, as soon as the heart ends, as soon as the last thing, the weight didn't change. Where'd it go? Where was the baby? Where's the baby now? I don't get it. Then he says, there is no God. Quit calling a verb a noun. Then he said, I'd like to lead you in a prayer. By this time, my mind is just going crazy. He said, I'd like to lead you in a prayer. I said, if there is no God, what's he going to pray to? And he said, here's the prayer. Let's pray to relieve God of the bondage. And I said, wait. Because, right, I always pray, dear God, please relieve me of the bondage. He said, let's pray to relieve God of the bondage of the personalities that we've imposed on him.
Wow.
It's got to be female. It's got to be. The creator of all has personality. He said, let's pray to relieve God of the bondage of the personalities that we've imposed on him, thinking it's the only thing. Then I'm even more confused. And then he said, there is no God, but there is nothing but godliness. Quit calling a verb a noun. Thank you for letting us be here.
Hello, everybody. My name is Bart. I'm an alcoholic. I want you to give yourselves one big round of applause, please. If it wasn't for you people, we'd have no reason to be here this weekend. That's why I just asked you to give yourselves a round of applause. That's the most important thing, is that you guys come every year when we put this together. So that is the most important thing. A lot of people, last year or the year before, I think it was, I got a one of the registrations came, and I saved it. The registration came, here's God's money for God's weekend, and that really touched me. A lot of people this weekend kept thanking us, came up and said, are you the one that's in charge of this? How do you do this? You know, for the amount of money that we send you to put this together, how does it happen? It came very clear to me this weekend, and that letter came together. You guys fill out the form. You sign a contract that we're getting together, and it just happens. I don't know how we do it for what you send us. I'm not in charge. I don't know how we're sober. You know, that's not supposed to happen. For the little amount of money we put together to put this together, I don't know how that happens, but it happens. It's just the miracles that happen in AA. And again, I want to thank you so much for all of that. Thanks for the speakers for coming down. Mickey, Joe, Mark, Chris, all of you touch my heart every year. Thanks a lot. And Rick.
I'll just take a minute. I just want to personally thank Chris for last night. Chris came here to just hang out, and he took it out of his time to share a message, his message with us, or the message with us. And so we felt.
He can't sit anywhere.
You know, I kind of get sometimes annoyed about the comments I hear about Chris, and I get worried about him. I want you to come up here a minute. Every time I go out of my comfort zone to speak, I go into my closet and I get something so everybody know where I'm from and they don't mess with me. So I got you. And a little hat. We love you, man. You guys, again, thanks a lot. You give us purpose every year to do this, and we love you all, and that's it. Close with a prayer.